MoneyWeb now on the money.
This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. I'm chatting with Mikhail Mottola, fund manager, PSG Asset Management. Mikhail, appreciate the time. A much more positive end to the year than what started. We've had the GNU formed. We've got electricity working, rates down, inflation down. A lot of talk around SA Inc. stocks. My first question is, how much of the JSE can we classify as SA Inc.? Because a lot of it is, you know, AB InBev, British American Tobacco, NASPAS, which is just Tencent. How much is really SA Inc.?
Yeah, thanks, Simon. It oscillates, but it averages around 50%. So call it half of the JSE stock market is SA Inc.
Okay, that's actually probably a little chunkier perhaps than I would have thought. We've certainly seen some good moves in some of those SA Inc. stocks. Are foreigners buying yet? My sense is that they're still fairly underweight and it's been local buying more than anything.
Yeah, that's correct. They haven't really been buying. I mean, it's ticked up slightly, but if we just zoom out and we look at the last year, foreigners have been net sellers on the JSE to the tune of about 120 billion rand. Sure. That's a far cry from the days of Ramaphosa, if you recall early 2018, when foreigners were net buyers on the JSE to the tune of around 30 billion rand. So it's about 150 billion rand swing between then and now.
I want to come back to foreigners, but have locals. I mean, because I think about it, there's certainly, I can think of some retailers, for example, that have had phenomenal years. Some of the banks have done incredibly well as well. There's been, therefore, local buying, but perhaps relatively concentrated in the SA Inc. space?
Yeah, so I think there's two factors I'd call out. The first is that positioning of local asset managers heading into the elections, but even extending it sort of through the duration of 2023, was very bearish SA assets in general. Mm. And one of the contributing factors was the relaxation of the foreign exchange limits for unit trusts. So with the allowance of 45% offshore, most large funds took 45% offshore. And then what remained in terms of what was within the 55% in multi-asset funds was often concentrated in South African government bonds. Mm-hmm. And in equity funds was concentrated in lots of the Rand hedge stocks on the JSE. So what that meant was that SA Inc. shares were almost the neglected asset. And post the formation of the Government of National Unity, there's been a scramble for those assets. So that's point one. Point two is then what assets has there been a scramble for? And large funds really can only play in a handful of areas. And those that spring to mind, the banks would be the largest sector of SA Inc. that they can play in. Then apparel retail, food retail, and life insurance. That's about it. Unfortunately, there just aren't that many industrial conglomerates left on our JSE anymore that would have also attracted similar flow.
The point is, and in a recent note, you said you and your team were actually positioning yourself even ahead of the election, ahead of the load shedding ending, simply based on valuations. Now, some stocks have run hard. Others have run a little bit. Valuations are still cheap and outlook must have improved. I mean, simple things like having electricity makes a world of difference to businesses. It would have been nice to go back and load up pre the election, but there is still value here in large swaths of SA Inc.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously with a crystal ball, everyone wants to have had exposure. But that being said, it also depends on one's investment philosophy. So if one has the ability to embrace a bit of fear, be counter-cyclical, then yes, buying the assets at 6 or 7 times earnings, as they were trading in sort of March, April of this year, if I look at the apparel retailers, the banks as examples, buying it on those valuations where there was no prospect of any growth, it's not something for everybody. Where we sit today is that, yes, there's been a bounce off those low valuations, but we still trade at discounts to long-term averages. South Africa trades at a discount to emerging market peers. But crucially, the outlook for earnings is a lot more greener today than what it has been pretty much at any time over the last decade. Mm. I think what gets forgotten about is that these are companies at the end of the day run by management teams who build these competitive advantages for themselves, and they've had to do this without the tailwind of any economic growth from within a decade. So if there is a little bit of economic growth, then imagine what that would do to the bottom line of some of these companies.
Yeah, imagine then 5% economic growth. But I love your phrase, embrace a bit of fear. Investing, if it's too comfortable, you're probably in the wrong place. But I mean, all of this said, you know, we've still got a fair bit of local underweight, the broader SA Inc. At some point, I imagine the foreigners are going to wake up, particularly we look at some of the valuations across in the US. To someone who's thinking, we've missed the SA Inc. rally, I mean, this could still be early days.
Yeah, so there's a couple of factors to call out. The first is to consider how South Africa looks relative to other emerging markets mm-hmm. and maybe contrast that to 5 years ago. So if you contrast the picture 5 years ago, yeah, we just focus on the BRICS countries. You know, Brazil was still growing quite attractively. India was showing gangbusters growth. China was very much still investable 5 years ago, was pre-COVID. And Russia was investable because they hadn't invaded Ukraine yet.
Yeah.
So South Africa was like the laggard amongst the big slowest growth, you know, corruption problems, Eskom that seemed that it was never going to be turned around, etc. Whereas when we fast forward to today, for many market participants, Russia is uninvestable. Then for Western market participants, they look upon China with caution. Brazil, there's opportunity in Brazil, but again, for many sort of Western market participants, they look at the fundamentals of Brazil and the impact of the inflation, the currency is making new lows. Again, unless you're willing to embrace the fear, it becomes difficult to venture into Brazil. You know, we can come back to that at the end. But on a sort of comparison sake, South Africa looks a lot more attractive on a relative basis, should I say. That's point number one. Point number two is the foreigners were so burnt in Ramaphosa, clean-and-see approach that's being adopted. And I'd call out a few factors that they're waiting to see. The first is actual GDP growth coming to fruition. Mm-hmm. The second is the debt-to-GDP ratio not only stabilized downwards, again, something that's experienced and lived, not just a promise that it's going to happen. And then some political reform.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is that these are all quite circular in the sense that if one starts, the other one happens quite quickly. And the other thing is that markets will tend to jump ahead of the fundamentals. Mm-hmm. So if you consider where positioning is currently, foreign investors, and again, we're using that term very homogeneously, but let's call it foreign investors, will come back to our markets. They look more attractive relative to other EMs. And at some point, once they start seeing numbers printed, they'll pull the trigger. And then these stocks have a long way still to go.
Yeah. And it's to your earlier point, at this point, we're embracing a bit of fear. But there is a story out there. We'll leave it there. It's Mikko Motala. He's fund manager, PSG Asset Management. Appreciate the time.
This podcast is brought to you by StanLib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management.